This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Monday, April 10th, 2017. Coming up this hour,
St. Louis Fed President James Bullard says policymakers could unwind as much as $2.5 trillion from their balance sheet.
Equities in South Korea slump as the U.S. sends warships to waters near North Korea.
An anonymous complaint sparks an investigation into Barclays CEO Jess Staley.
Neil Gorsuch sworn in today as the newest member of the Supreme Court, and more than 40 dead after Palm Sunday attacks in Egypt. I'm John Tucker. The story straight ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Sergio Garcia won the Masters in a playoff with Justin Rose. Mets and Yankees both won. The Yankees have their home opener this afternoon.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1200 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on Bloomberg.com and via the Radio Plus mobile app.
Good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Michael Barr. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer RIA that's ready to listen. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more.
And it's 5:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. And right now, S&P futures are up a single point, less than a tenth of 1%. Dow futures higher by 12 points. NASDAQ futures up by 3 points. In Europe, London's FTSE is up almost a tenth of 1%. The CAC in Paris is down 0.5%. And the DAX in Frankfurt is down a tenth of 1%. Tokyo's Nikkei closed higher by 0.75%. And the Hang Seng closed unchanged. 10-year Treasury prices up 2/32, the yield at 2.3751%. The 2-year yield at 1.2822. West Texas Intermediate crude is up 0.75% to $52.63 a barrel. Brent crude higher by 0.8% to $55.71 a barrel. COMEX gold prices are down 0.2% or $2.20 an ounce to $12.5510. The pound is trading at $1.2400, the euro at $1.0587, and the yen at $1.1131.
We begin this morning in London, where Barclays CEO Jess Staley finds himself to be the target of an investigation. Bloomberg's Manus Krani joins us live from our London bureau with the latest. Good morning, Manus.
Michael, Bob, a very good day to you. Yeah, Jess Staley finds himself right in the crosshairs of the regulators. The UK Financial Conduct Authority and the Prudential Regulation Authority have started investigations into his conduct. Now, the bank said that the CEO had made an error. This was in not applying appropriate governance and attempting to identify a Barclays whistleblower. This was last year. The stock is actually up 0.4% at the moment. Trying to identify a complainant could violate US and UK laws protecting whistleblowers. And the Department of Financial Services in New York is also scrutinizing the case. Now, the Barclays board has issued a formal written reprimand to Staley and delivered a very, as they call it, a very substantial compensation adjustment. Staley has apologized. Meanwhile, when it comes to the mining and commodity side, we've got BHP Billiton on our sites. Investor Elliott Management has called for Billy's to unify its corporate structure, spin off more assets, and improve the capital returns. Elliott said that the world's biggest mining company, which is two separate legal entities listed in Sydney and in London, are run as one group, should become a single Australian headquartered company. The New York hedge fund also urged BHP Billiton to seek a demerger of its US petroleum assets. Manus Krani, Bloomberg Daybreak, London.
Thank you, Manus. In Italy today, the group of seven foreign ministers begins a two-day meeting. It will be Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's first appearance at the annual gathering, and Bloomberg's Michael McKee reports.
The ministers' meeting would have been contentious in any case, but the U.S. strike on Syria adds a level of tension. While other G7 nations supported the action, members of the group, Canada, Germany, France, Japan, the U.K., and Italy, remain wary of the Trump administration and its foreign policy plans. Tillerson will be asked, on Syria, what next? Will the U.S. try to cobble together safe zones with the implication other G7 countries would be expected to supply troops and air support? And does the quick action on Syria imply anything for how the administration will deal with North Korea? Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Michael. Equities in Asia have finished up trading for this Monday. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally has all the details from our Hong Kong bureau.
Michael and Bob, most Asian markets started the shortened trading week on a positive note, despite ongoing geopolitical concerns as the US diverted warships to waters near North Korea. The yen fell against the dollar, boosting Japanese equities, with the Nikkei 225 adding 0.7% by the close. Stocks in Seoul, though, reacted to geopolitical concerns, the Kospi falling the most in more than 5 weeks, and the won leading losses amongst major Asian currencies. The Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong was little changed as JP Morgan issued a warning over the city's overheated property market, while stocks in Shanghai retreated from January highs. Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak, Hong Kong.
Juliet, thank you. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President James Bullard says the Fed should start shrinking its $4.5 trillion balance sheet now. Speaking to Bloomberg in Australia, he echoed comments from policymakers in the minutes from their March meeting.
The committee has not decided what it wants to do. But even if we ran policy with significant amounts of reserves, we'd only need a balance sheet probably in the $2 trillion range.
In his interview with Bloomberg, Bullard went on to say the St. Louis Fed believes interest rates can remain relatively low for the time being.
We think that the policy rate doesn't have to be raised all that much from where it is today in order to keep inflation and unemployment about where they are today. And therefore, there isn't that much normalization that needs to go on with respect to the policy rate.
St. Louis Fed President James Bullard is currently not a voting member of the FOMC. He next votes on monetary policy in 2019.
And in deal news this morning, Stada Arch Nimetal has agreed to sell itself to Bain Capital and Cinvain for $5.6 billion. The acquisition gives the two private equity firms one of the last independent generic drug businesses in Europe. The price tag is 49% higher than Stada's value in December when takeover talks first surfaced.
And let's check the markets for you. S&P futures currently up a single point, less than a tenth of 1%. 10-year Treasury yield at 2.3733. West Texas Intermediate crude is up 0.2% to $52.61 a barrel. Brent crude higher by 0.75% to $55.66. Stay with us for world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at other news around the world. And standing by, here is John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you, Michael. The State Department condemning in the strongest terms what it calls the barbaric acts on Christian places of worship in Egypt. Bombs at two Coptic churches in northern Egypt killed more than 40 people and wounded about 100 others on Palm Sunday. The Islamic State group is claiming responsibility for the explosions. New York's Cardinal Timothy Dolan responded to the Palm Sunday attacks, praising the Coptic community's faith.
If you see the hope and the resilience of the Coptic people who are here with us now in New York after all they've been through, their faith won't let them down.
After enduring weeks of criticism that he's been silent and sidelined in the Trump administration, Rex Tillerson travels to Moscow this week. Newly emboldened by the U.S. decision to fire 59 Tomahawk missiles on an airbase in Syria, the Secretary of State likely to face a tongue-lashing over the attack from the Foreign Minister of Russia and from President Vladimir Putin, unless Putin snubs the American visitor by declining to grant him an audience. 2 weeks from the first round of the French election, the expected standoff between Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen is quickly becoming a four-way race. Bloomberg's Carolyn Conan reports from Paris.
The Republican François Fillon is making a comeback in the polls, and the far left-wing candidate Jean-Luc Mélenchon still got the momentum since his good performance in a TV debate last week. Both Fillon and Mélenchon just a few points behind the frontrunners Le Pen and Macron. With 40% of undecided voters less than 2 weeks before the votes, many could still change their minds at the last minute and create a surprise. Carolyn Conan, Bloomberg Daybreak, Paris.
And Judge Neil Gorsuch is about to take his place as the newest Supreme Court Justice. The 49-year-old appeals court judge from Colorado will be sworn in later today. You can hear the swearing-in ceremony live on Bloomberg Radio around 11 Wall Street time. And global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Michael.
John, thank you, sir. It is now 5:09 on Wall Street. Time now with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And here's John Stashower.
Michael, it was riveting golf. Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose, the two European Ryder Cup teammates born 7 months apart. It was evident early on that as the final twosome, they would be cleared from the field, and they battled for 19 holes. Garcia missing a makeable putt on 18 that would have won him the Masters. So they replayed 18, and Rose with an errant tee shot with bogey. So Garcia had two putts to win, and it only took him one.
Brings the putter back. Ball its way toward the hole, and it's in with birdie. And Sergio Garcia has won his first major with a birdie on the first playoff hole here in the 81st Masters.
That's the one to call at age 37. After 22 top 10 finishes in majors, Garcia finally wins his first.
Thrill to be standing here this late on Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. It's always a beautiful thing to have. So, it's been an amazing week, and I'm going to enjoy it for the rest of my life.
Matt Kuchar, who had a hole-in-one, was the only American in the top six. Yankee home opener today against Tampa Bay. They did not want to come home 1-5. They trailed 3-0 at Baltimore, came back to win 7-3 with four runs in the ninth inning. At Citi Field last night, Mets salvaged one from the Marlins thanks to Noah Syndergaard, allowing only one earned run over seven innings. He struck out nine home runs for Jay Bruce and Michael Conforto. The Mets won 5-2. They're in Philadelphia tonight. Rangers beat Pittsburgh 3-2. The Rangers open up the Stanley Cup playoffs in Montreal on Wednesday. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Michael.
Thank you very much, John. Sergio Garcia earned more than just a green jacket with the Masters victory that you just mentioned. He received the biggest payout in tournament history. Garcia earned $1.98 million for the win. That is $18,000 more than the last two Masters champions. Runner-up Justin Rose received $1.1 million, and he received that just in the playoff round. Taking a look at the S&P futures, it is little changed on the board. And coming up, we'll talk with George Goncalves, the Nomura head of America's fixed income strategy. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the National Realty Managers of New York City Cash Flow Real Estate, providing you 10 to 16% annualized returns with immediate monthly distribution.
Mobile business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And good morning to you once again from Bloomberg World Headquarters. I'm Bob Moon with this Bloomberg Radio Business Flash brought to you by Korn Ferry Leadership, Rewards, Culture, Recruitment. Let Korn Ferry help sync your talent to your strategy to release the full power of your people. Learn more at kornferry.com/up. S&P futures this morning up a single point, less than a tenth of 1%. Dow futures higher by 12 points. NASDAQ futures up by 2 points. In Europe, London's FTSE is unchanged at this hour. The CAC in Paris is down 0.5%. The DAX in Frankfurt down a tenth of 1%. 10-year yield is at 2.3751. The 2-year yield at 1.2822. West Texas Intermediate crude is up 0.2% to $52.60 a barrel. Brent crude higher by 0.75% to $55.67 a barrel. COMEX gold prices down 0.1% to $12.55.30 an ounce. The pound trading at $1.2398, the euro at $1.0588, and the yen at $1.1130. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world.
And good morning, Bob. President Donald Trump's national security advisor is calling on Russia to reevaluate its support for Syrian President Bashar Assad, leaving open the possibility of additional U.S. military action against Syria. H.R. McMaster pointed to dual U.S. goals of defeating the Islamic State group and removing Assad from power. Judge Neil Gorsuch about to take his place as the newest member of the Supreme Court. The 49-year-old appeals court judge from Colorado will be sworn in later today. His nomination led to a bruising fight that saw Republicans change the rules for approving Supreme Court picks over the fierce objection of Democrats. Foreign ministers from the group of seven nations gathering for a meeting given urgency by the chemical attack in Syria and the U.S. military response. Participants are aiming to pressure Russia to end its support for a President Bashar Assad. In sports, a couple of home openers today. The Yankees host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers while the Giants take on Arizona. the Tampa Bay Rays. The Mets play Philadelphia. The Red Sox face Detroit. Basketball, the Nets travel to Boston to play the Celtics. And Sergio Garcia wins the Masters. Global News 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Bob.
John Tucker, thank you very much. And more Fed speak. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President James Bullard, as we've reported, responding to questions after a presentation in Melbourne today. He says reducing the balance sheet would put less downward pressure on medium and long-term parts of the yield curve, and all else equal, those rates would go up a little bit. He doesn't think the effect would be too big for the kind of end-of-reinvestment policy that we're talking about. He echoed comments from policymakers in the minutes from their March meeting. Let's bring in George Goncalves now to talk about this. He's Nomura head of America's fixed income strategy, and he's joining us on our phone line sponsored by Spectrum Enterprise, your nationwide provider of scalable fiber network services and managed cloud solutions. George, good morning. Would you concur with what James Bullard has to say about this being a little impact?
I think, look, it's still to be determined, you know, how the actual, you know, adjustment in long-term rates, medium-term rates, as suggested, would react to the Fed eventually unwinding its balance sheet. But we do think that is going to be one of the policy tools that they're going to use. And I think, you know, as we heard from the minutes and, you know, and as, quite frankly, since the beginning of the year, there's been, a host of speakers, you know, really trying to understand how to, you know, get the message out there on the balance sheet. And I think, you know, what we heard, both, you know, what we read both in the minutes and what we're hearing continually is that the balance sheet's going to be used. The question is really when and, you know, what's going to be the impact. We think it's going to be more than just a gradual move. But given that they're giving us such a huge lead time of, you know, potentially over a year before they implement it, or at least to the end of the year, that, you know, maybe it'll be priced in by the time it gets there.
Well, you talk about a huge lead time. We saw a big lead time to tapering, and we still saw a taper tantrum. Could we see some kind of tantrum in this case?
The question really is not so much in the bond market, I think. In our view, it's really the impact to other asset classes. You know, during the actual implementation of QE, you know, one of the arguments that was used was that portfolio rebalancing would force investors into other asset classes like credit and equities. Now, if you start to unwind that process, you know, the risk that the Fed will be taking is really, you know, trying to believe that, you know, the economy is self-sustaining and that they don't really need to be involved in the markets. And I think that's going to be really, you know, the $3 or $4 trillion question.
How much are the markets on edge about this question?
I think it's in the back of most investors' minds. I'm not sure if it's really driving investment decisions. I do think that, you know, there's a host of issues that are out there. Also, when will the global central banks like the BOJ and the ECB stop their QE programs, let alone, you know, the Fed balance sheet being reduced? So all these things have had a huge effect on anchoring long-term rates. And the question really, you know, no one really knows exactly, you know, as they unwind, you know, how much further can rates go.
How confident are you right now in where the recovery stands at this point? If this were a baseball game, what inning are we in?
Yeah, look, it really depends on the idea if we can actually materialize on the animal spirits that have been, you know, pretty robust post-election. Right? And you know, last Friday's NFP report was the first kind of evidence that, you know, perhaps, you know, there's, you know, a difficulty of translating a lot of these animal spirits into actual business activity. And if that trend were to continue, and if we had a lot of the euphoria kind of burn out into the beginning of the summer, then, you know, the Fed would go back to being cautious. So I would say, you know, somewhere in the seventh to eighth inning at this point, and, you know, we'll see, you know, and it can very well be towards the end if there were to be some sort of exogenous shock.
I know you're not an analyst, but we've got bank earnings coming out at the end of the week. Does the picture look bright?
The key for us, you know, at least what it means for the financial system, is not flattening the curve and to have a curve that has the ability for banks to make money. And so, you know, one of the reasons why we do think the Fed should, you know, slowly, gradually get out of being in their balance sheet would be to keep the curve steep and really force longer-term rates higher. That's not the only reason why they would do it. But we do think flattening of the curve that we've seen so far is not good for business. So we do think that we need to see some steepness of the curve, and that could impact the bank earnings.
Our thanks to George Goncalves. George Concaves, Nomura Head of America's Fixed Income Strategy, joining us on our phone line sponsored by Spectrum Enterprise, your nationwide provider of scalable fiber network services and managed cloud solutions. S&P futures this morning up a single point, less than a tenth of 1%. 10-year Treasury prices up 2/32, the yield at 2.3751%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by the New York Community Trust, where donors like you help them make New York better.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Michael Barr. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSBDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
It is 5:30 on Wall Street, and we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks around the world are mixed as we begin a new trading week, with investors weighing geopolitical risks and the path of U.S. monetary policy.
The group of seven foreign ministers begin a two-day meeting in Italy today. It will be U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's first appearance at the annual gathering.
Barclays Chief Executive Officer Jess Staley will be reprimanded and take a pay cut. The move comes as regulators begin an investigation into how he tried to unmask a whistleblower last year.
There's a report that snack maker Mondelez will look for a replacement for CEO Irene Rosenfeld. The Wall Street Journal says the company has retained executive search firm Heidrick and Struggles. Activist investors are unhappy that the Oreo cookie maker's sales have fallen the last 3 years.
BHP Billiton shares in London are up 5% this morning. The world's largest mining company is being targeted by billionaire Paul Singer's Elliott Management for an overhaul.
Here in the U.S., on the economic calendar this week, we'll get a trio of government reports on inflation. Bloomberg's Venny Del Giudice has more.
The Labor Department will issue the Import Price Index, the Producer Price Index, and the Consumer Price Index. Nearly all voting members of the Federal Reserve's policy panel suspect inflation is just short of the Fed's target, according to minutes of the last meeting. The CPI data include figures on earnings adjusted for inflation. Also on this week's calendar from the Commerce Department, figures on retail sales, which stalled in February. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinny, and we'll hear from Janet Yellen ahead of those reports. The Fed chair speaks this afternoon at the University of Michigan.
Bank earnings in the U.S. will also be in focus this week on Thursday. JPMorgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup all report quarterly results.
Crude oil is extending gains this morning as Russia signals it's weighing an extension to production cuts led by OPEC. Checking now, West Texas Intermediate crude is trading at $52.61 a barrel, and Brent crude is trading at $55.70 a barrel.
And a forward look at the markets. S&P futures currently up a single point, less than a tenth of 1%. Dow futures higher by 8 points. NASDAQ futures up by 2 points. 10-year Treasury prices up 2/32. The yield at 2.3733%. Stay with us for the latest in world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
It's now 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's take a look at what's happening around the world. And standing by, here is John Tucker. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you, Michael. More than 40 people have been killed after suspected suicide bombers struck two Egyptian churches on Palm Sunday. Egypt's president, El-Sisi, has declared a three-month state of emergency and also created a powerful new anti-terrorism body with sweeping authority over the media and the judiciary.
We have issued a number of measures, and on top of those is declaring a three-month state of emergency after fulfilling the legal and constitutional measures needed. We are doing this only to protect our country.
Islamic State has claimed responsibility for both attacks. Swedish prosecutor's office says in a statement it's arrested a second person suspected of taking part in that terror attack that saw a truck run over pedestrians in central Stockholm on Friday. Four people were killed in that attack. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says he'll challenge Russia about chemical weapons in Syria when he travels to Moscow this week. Tillerson discussed the Trump administration's next moves following Friday's missile strike against President Bashar al-Assad's military forces on ABC's This Week.
That will be part of the discussions when I visit Moscow next week, is to call upon Foreign Minister Lavrov and the Russian government to fulfill the obligation it made to the international community when it agreed to be the guarantor of the elimination of the chemical weapons.
Tillerson also said America isn't interested in regime change in North Korea. That, as U.S. warships have been diverted to waters near the country amid heightened tensions. And Judge Neil Gorsuch will take his place as the newest member of the Supreme Court today. The 49-year-old appeals court judge will be sworn in later today. His nomination led to a fight that saw Republicans change the rules for approving Supreme Court picks. Ford Motor has found a new way for cops to chase down the bad guys in a speeding police cruiser while helping the environment at the same time. The automaker says its new police responder hybrid sedan, a modified Fusion, is the first gasoline electric cop car to be pursuit rated, meaning it can race through streets while navigating crowded intersections or hopping curbs. The vehicle is being unveiled today. And global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Michael.
John, thank you very much. 5:35 now on Wall Street. Time now with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And standing by, here's John Stashower.
Michael, Sergio Garcia burst onto the golf scene as a 19-year-old with a runner-up finish to Tiger Woods in the 1999 PGA Championship, the first of 23 top 10 finishes in majors. Finally, at age 37, a major championship. Garcia, in a thrilling Sunday duel with European Ryder Cup teammate Justin Rose, won the Masters in a playoff.
For some reason, when I get into playoffs, usually now lately, I'm quite comfortable. I feel like I've already had an amazing week, no matter what happens. And, you know, I can go out there and kind of freewheel it. And obviously, hit two great shots and a wonderful putt to finish with.
He and Rose started the day tied. Garcia took the lead, then Rose, then Garcia got even. And he could have won it on 18, missed the putt, but he dominated the playoff. He birdied and Rose bogey. Yankee home opener today, Michael Pineda against Tampa Bay. Yanks trailed in Baltimore 3-0, came back to win 7-3 with four runs in the ninth inning. The Orioles helped them, issuing 11 walks. Matt Holliday came up five times and walked in all five trips. City Field last night, Noah Syndergaard, superb. Mets beat the Marlins 5-2. They're in Philadelphia tonight. What a win for the Angels. Six runs bottom of the ninth to beat Seattle 10-9. The NHL regular season is over. The Islanders won. The Devils lost. The Rangers last night beat Pittsburgh 3-2. Now they're off to Montreal to start the Stanley Cup playoffs Wednesday. Rangers win 0-3 against the Canadiens in the regular season. Knicks lost at the Garden to Toronto, 110-97. Cleveland blew a 26-point lead, lost in Atlanta. Russell Westbrook with his NBA record 42nd triple-double of the season. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Michael?
John, thank you very much. 5:37 now on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Let's check in with Bloomberg's Ed Curry.
Well, New York State lawmakers can bank on their paychecks now. They've given final passage to a $153 billion budget 9 days late. Since April 1st, the state had been operating on a two-month extension of last year's budget. The state Senate returned for a rare Palm Sunday session and finished its work late last night. New York Governor Chris Christie is moving on. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie moving on with a $300 million plan to renovate the state capitol. This project will be wrapped up after he's left office. Workers were already moving to temporary quarters. State lawmakers say Christie isn't revealing anything about the plan's logistics and finances. They're wondering if the state can afford this kind of project. Well, you get what you pay for. That may be Yale University's take on the fees it pays to external managers. The school defended the fees in an annual report, saying a low-cost passive strategy would have shortchanged the Ivy League school's students and faculty. The report won't say exactly how much the fund pays. And that's your Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Michael?
Ed, thank you very much. Ford CEO Mark Fields is in Shanghai to unveil the plans to introduce more electric cars and trucks in China. In an interview with Bloomberg, he hailed the meeting last week between President Donald Trump and his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping.
When you have two leaders who meet face to face, they become people to each other. And so that basis, I think, and reading from the reports from the meetings, that's a very firm foundation to then go off and make concrete advances to strengthen the ties between the two countries. There's huge, enormous mutual ties between the two countries from a trade standpoint. And we'd have to tread very carefully on that because the economic relationship is the basis of the overall relationship. And I'm glad to see both leaders meeting early on in their tenures.
Speaking to Bloomberg in Shanghai, Ford CEO Mark Fields also said he sees big opportunities for pickup truck demand in China. And now let's check in with our Bloomberg affiliate radio stations to find out what commuters are hearing all around the world this morning.
I'm Andrew O'Day on Boston's WBZ. I'm reporting on a Boston Consulting Group study forecasting a quarter of us in driverless cars by the end of next decade.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Ford CEO Mark Fields hailed President Trump's meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping as a step towards stronger ties.
I'm Marcus Carlton on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the funeral of police officer Keith Palmer, the 48-year-old killed in London's terror attack at Westminster.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that data from one local researcher shows chocolate candy prices falling just in time for Easter.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut, I'm talking about Yale University's endowment defending the high fees it pays outside money managers.
And those are just some of the stories Bloomberg is reporting across the globe this morning. Taking a data check, the S&P futures are pretty much even on the board. Same also, not much change for the Dow and for the NASDAQ. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Eisner Amper. It's Pivotal, the new tech event from Eisner Amper you won't want to miss. Pivotal, May 9th, Westbury, New York. Learn more, Pivotal at EisnerAmper.com.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Good morning to you from Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York. I'm Bob Moon with this Bloomberg Radio Business Flash. We'll be hearing from Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen later today. She's appearing at an event at the University of Michigan's Gerald R. Ford School of Public Policy at 4 this afternoon, Wall Street time. She'll also take questions from the audience and from Twitter tweeters. We check the markets for you every 15 minutes throughout the trading day here on Bloomberg Radio. S&P futures at this hour virtually unchanged, as are Dow futures and NASDAQ futures. In Europe, London's FTSE is virtually unchanged. The CAC in Paris is down 0.6%. The DAX in Frankfurt is down 0.25%. Tokyo's Nikkei closed lower by, closed higher by 0.75%. 10-year Treasury prices up 2/32. The yield at 2.3751%. West Texas Intermediate crude up 0.75% to $52.61 a barrel. Brent crude higher by 0.8% to $55.72. COMEX gold prices down 0.2% or $2.50 an ounce to $12.5480. The pound trading at $1.2393. The euro at $1.0580. And the yen at $1.1130. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's John Tucker with more on what's going on around the world. John.
Yeah, Bob, Egyptian President al-Sisi has declared a three-month state of emergency after the worst terrorist attack on civilians under his rule raised fears Islamic State was planning to launch more assaults on major cities. The radical group claimed responsibility for twin church bombings on Palm Sunday. Government funding expires April 28th, which will give Congress, which is now in recess, 5 days to unveil, debate, and pass an enormous spending bill or trigger a government shutdown. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the U.S. wasn't interested in regime change in North Korea. This is American warships were diverted to waters near the country amid heightened tensions over its nuclear weapons program. In recent weeks, attackers have changed the bank deposit information on Amazon accounts of active sellers. According to the Wall Street Journal, some clients lost about half their monthly sales. And at Bloomberg Sports, Sergio Garcia wins the Masters with a sudden-death victory over Justin Rose. Baseball, Yankees, Mets, Red Sox, Giants all win. In basketball, the Knicks lose. NHL playoffs begin Wednesday. The Rangers play the Canadiens. The Bruins take on Ottawa. And San Jose faces off against Edmonton. And global news, 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg. Michael.
John, thank you very much. Now it's time to check in with Bloomberg Gadfly. Gadfly is Bloomberg's global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis about pivotal financial, markets, and corporate news. We are joined live now by Edward Evans, Bloomberg Gadfly editor in our London Bureau. First of all, good morning. IPO investors, they take the baton of the tech valuation insanity. It was just like 6 months ago that tech investors were complaining about bankers lowballing stock prices, and now it looks like that has all changed.
Yeah, no one should be griping about overly conservative IPO prices these days. Look at last week when business software company Okta went public in an IPO that valued the company at about just under 14 times trailing 12-month revenue. Shares actually opened up from the IPO and it valued it at almost 19 times trailing month 12-month revenue. That is not conservative. Okta has nice software, experienced executive team, and sales are certainly growing. But we appeared a whipsawed from last June when another high-quality business software company, somebody called Twilio, went public at just 7.8 times revenue. Note how that's a much lower multiple than Okta. Now, subjectively, Twilio has better software than Okta. Both companies have nearly identical revenue and growth rates at their IPO. Twilio was barely cash flow negative compared with Okta's free cash flow burn rate of $54 million in the most recent fiscal year. Now, it's common for tech companies to have aggressive valuations at their IPOs. Sometimes it works out fine, they grow into their valuation. Other times it doesn't. What's surprising at the moment is how the isn't necessarily the heady valuations for middling companies like Okta, but how much has changed so quickly with the IPO market and its pricing dynamics in it. It shows investors really want to buy shares of younger public companies. Demand is pushing IPO prices above what they would have been last year. And if a company is considering an IPO, there are no excuses. It should do it right now. Question, though, is what this means for some of these tech companies that have stayed private and have got enormous valuations from the private markets. It suggests then that some of these overvalued tech companies, people like Cloudera, Dropbox and Spotify, means that the IPO investors are going to become the new piggy bank of choice for Silicon Valley's startups.
China's insurance probe continues, but that is not stopping the urge from the firms overseas. What's up with that?
Zhang Jiangbo, the man on whose watch China's insurance industry flourished, is now, of course, under investigation. But with so many firms still hungry for returns and diversification, that shouldn't slow insurance companies' overseas buying. Change will be this. Instead of upstarts, people like Anbang Insurance Company, whose portfolio of assets includes the Waldorf Astoria in New York, the buyers of the future are likely to be more old school. Think of people like Ping An or China Life. Of course, under Jiang, what happened was the nation's insurance industry developed rapidly and relatively young players like Anbang expanded through sales of so-called universal life insurance products, short-term, high-yielding investments that include a very small insurance component. Now, to meet the heady returns these policies promised, insurers embarked on buying sprees of listed domestic companies. Now, while Jiang did tighten curbs on universal life products and moved to restrict some acquisitions of publicly traded firms, he was late to the party. Now, there may be some slowdown of the corporate raiders, but what they can't halt will be international expansion. The nation's insurers had almost $50 billion of investments outside China at the end of last year. That's about 2.3% of assets. They're allowed to have up to 15%. So that suggests that there is more to come here.
Edward Evans, thank you, sir. You can read more fast commentary and instant analysis at Bloomberg.com, Gadfly, or by typing GADFGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
And now time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. Today, Bloomberg Law hosts Michael Best and Greg Stohr discuss the constitutionality of President Trump's attacks on a Syrian airbase last week. They speak to Michael Glennon, a professor at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, and William Banks, director of the Institute for National Security and Counterterrorism at Syracuse University Law School.
Bill, can you explain what your understanding is of what basis the president and his administration have articulated to say that he was authorized to order these strikes?
Well, the administration so far has done very little to explain the legal basis for the strikes. The statement talked about the purpose being to deter Assad from using chemical weapons, and also made mention of the fact that the strike, it was deemed to be proportionate to the underlying cause, which was the chemical weapons attack, but neither of those offers much of a legal explanation.
Well, Mike, what would the president have to show, say, under international law, to justify a strike like this?
Well, under the United Nations Charter, use of force or threat of force is prohibited absent an armed attack against a state. And when a state is the victim of an armed attack, it can seek assistance from other states. But there's no claim that the United States was acting in this latter capacity of collective self-defense, coming to aid anybody as a third party. The question is whether humanitarian intervention, so-called, is permissible under international law. And the answer under the Charter, of course, is no. There are two possibilities. One is the Security Council authorizes the use of force, and the other is that you're acting under Article 51 in response to an armed attack for purposes of self-defense. And neither one of those rationales applies here.
That's Michael Glennon, a professor at the Fletcher School at Tufts University, and William Banks, director of the Institute for National Security and Counterterrorism at Syracuse University Law School, speaking to Bloomberg Law hosts Greg Storr and Michael Best. You can listen to Bloomberg Law weekdays at 1 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio.
And that's this morning's Bloomberg Law Brief, and you can find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com for more information.
S&P futures right now are down a single point. Dow futures lower by 10 points. NASDAQ futures lower by 2 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak, and this is Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg BNA Report, legal, tax, and compliance information from the Bloomberg 99.1 Newsroom in Washington. Here's Steve Potisk.
President Trump often paints a picture of the U.S. as a country in dire need of better protection against terrorism, but his budget plans for the Environmental Protection Agency could cut critical initiatives for the agency's water office, and specialists say jeopardize efforts to fight terrorism. The IRS has an eye out for scammers targeting small businesses this tax filing season. The government watchdog says the agency has increased the number of filters it uses to identify them. And House Speaker Paul Ryan still has August in his plans to finish a tax overhaul system.
Bloomberg BNA, the leader in providing news, analysis, and proprietary business data that positions legal professionals to best advise their clients. This is Bloomberg.